It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. We'll flashback to something else. Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeartRadio. How y'all doing? Jason Kahn is here as well, producer number seven. We get tweets at Beating the Book. By the way, Michael Lombardi this hour. I got a whole bunch of draft questions for him. Brady Cannon on the Zurich Classic. A little quirky format this week. And Jason Weingarten momentarily stopping by, as he always does on Wednesdays, to talk baseball with us and whatever else we end up talking about. We get tweets, though, at Beating the Book. Edward J. Perez just tweeted. He said, Gil, I see Nadal is down again early on clay. Lost last time up. Live play on Nadal. Thoughts? First of all, I love numbers game listeners because everybody's like betting random stuff like tennis while we're doing the show. So I really appreciate that. I thank you for giving me the heads up. I did not see that Nadal was losing. And by losing, Nadal is down a break. There's a tennis tournament. These are all the preliminary tournaments to Roland Garros, to the French Open, tennis's second major of the season. And Nadal is, I don't know if you know this, Jason, the king of clay. There is no bigger feat in the sport of tennis than beating Rafael Nadal on clay, which Andre Rublev was able to do last week before losing to Tsitsipas in the finals in Monte Carlo. But it was an amazing match, but the fact that you beat Nadal on clay ever is just a spectacular thing. So here's this kid Ivashka, who is up a break. Ilya Ivashka, of course, if you're scoring at home, is up a break on Rafael Nadal. And so he's Belarusian. And my answer to Mr. Perez on Twitter was, well, yeah, I mean, no, I wouldn't bet Nadal live because if you look at live markets, down a break, he's still like minus $7. He's going to come back and win, he says as confidently as he can, right? Now, if he loses the first set, let's come back and look at what that price is. That would be my answer to that question. Because at that point, it gets a little interesting. You're like, oh, how much is Nadal favored by at this point? Because even if he loses the first set, he'll be a favorite. The question is by how much. But right now, just down a break, that's nothing. Nothing to the king of clay, Rafael Nadal. Let's bring him in from under a cloud of smoke somewhere in Southern California. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. He also contributes to Point Spread Weekly on a weekly basis. Always a fascinating read. It's Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Doing very well. All right, so I'm trying to get your betting schedule here. Let's start with sides or totals that you have bet today so far. What do you got?
I bet the A's. I bet them overnight. I still like them probably up to about minus 109.
That it's funny you say that. That was the last game. That was the one I considered, and I didn't end up pulling the trigger on the A's, but we were thinking along the same lines. Montas against Maeda. Coin flippy kind of game in Oakland this afternoon. That's the only one?
That's the only game I got so far.
Okay. Have you done, well, first innings probably aren't out, but are you perusing for first innings this morning, I imagine, when they come out?
Yeah, I'd like to bet, you know, all of them. I did something like that yesterday, and the results weren't so great, but, you know, that happens. Not going to really deter me from doing it again, but it is annoying when you lose a bunch on first innings.
Let me ask you about a game yesterday. So I came out here, and my one play yesterday was I was on Corbin Burnes versus Paddock of the Padres. I was certainly not alone, but it was one of those slates of games where it took me 4 seconds to make that play. I was like, how is this line? Because I'd actually seen the day before, I was like, oh, Paddock is facing Burnes tomorrow. I wonder what that line will be kind of thing. And I was like, well, you know, the market will be hip to Burnes. Burnes will be a slight favorite, that kind of thing. Nope, Burnes was still plus money. And I was just like, how is that? So the question to you becomes, is it just a chronic thing? Because I see with the Padres at this point, because I see Dinelson Lamet, who, by the way, is spectacular the first time through the order, right? And then, you know, like everybody falls off, but he does it in a precipitous way. He's almost a $2 favorite today again for the Padres. Is the market just in love with the Padres in a way that doesn't make sense?
You know, I actually had that as a fair line yesterday for the Brewers.
Did you?
But I did see a lot of people betting that, so I'm not surprised. And then Tatis and Machado were out, so I saw the line moved. I watched most of that game. I thought, like, I had a similar thought, too, that you know, was Burns really that short of a favorite? But, you know, I looked at the numbers and it was pretty fairly lined. Today is a little different. I like Lamet a lot too, but that's a really big price to play for a guy making his first start of the season is what worries me more. Just, you know, you never know if you're getting, you know, elite form in the first start, and he's likely not going to go deep today. So I do think that's a big price. I didn't bet the Brewers, but at least you're pointing it out. I might consider it later.
It's Gil Alexander. It's Jason Weingarten talking a little Major League Baseball right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. Okay, let me ask you about this. Early in the season, again, we preface everything by saying 10% of the way through the season. Give me the names of the starting pitchers where when you see them come up, this is the Hector Noesi Memorial Trophy. Not that Noesi has passed away, but for those of us who have bet baseball for many, many years, this is the Hector Noesi segment. Who are the guys that come up on a slate here early season where you're like, oh, your immediate instinct is if the price is right, fade away. Who are those guys early?
You know, Chicha Gonzalez is always that guy for me. But I think I've lost a bunch of money on him the first couple starts of his, either first innings or full game lines. I think I've lost overall. I'm probably down on the Rockies in general. I've probably betting against them too much. Besides him, let's see, who do I really not like?
Mad Bum? Madison Bumgarner, perhaps?
No, I don't mind him. I mean, I'm starting to think he's broken and I'm wrong. I don't like Jose Quintana. He's pitching today. Who else? Who else don't I like? Trying to think who I really but Chichi Gonzalez is a guy I really don't like. Quintana. There's
how do you feel about Carlos Martinez these days?
Don't mind him. He throws hard. He's just a guy who sometimes has problems with walks. But no, I don't hate him. I don't like Corey Kluber. I think he's looked kind of bad.
He's on the hill. With him. Yeah, he's on the hill today for the Yankees, who got off the schneid yesterday with the win. The reason I ask right. it, and I say it's the Hector Noesi, trophy. So for those of us who have bet baseball for many years, Noesi was just so bad. It's so easily fadeable. And they just kept rolling him out there. I think it was the Rangers, but don't hold me to that. Kid just kept rolling him out there. And it's one of these phenomena in baseball where we don't necessarily talk about this on the air. We talk about it behind the scenes more. But it's, you know, I can think of so many people who won Cy Youngs that late in their careers, they just, because of their pedigree, they roll them out. They give them more of a leash, right, a longer leash. Timmy Lincecum, who won two Cy Youngs, by the end, when he was with the Angels, he was just so bad. You're like, I can't believe they're rolling him out again. The price is perfect. I'm going against him. Felix, and all these guys were so good. It's you know, bettors are callous folks because we're just about, hey, how can we make money on this? Felix Hernandez, Bartolo Colon. I mean, how many times did he get rolled out late in his career? And sadly, it's Mad Bum to me this year because it's, and I know you're saying you still hold out hope for him, but I just, every time I see him come up, I'm like, oh man, give me one more time with Mad Bum. So that's just a thing. And I'm wondering if there's anybody else that's out there that's sort of in that category.
Steven Strasburg looked pretty bad. He's back on the DL already, but kind of worried about him if he's going to continue to be elite.
Yeah. Ooh. God, I don't want to hear that, but that could be a thing. Okay, let's go to the back end. Let's go to bullpens. I asked this of Paul Sporer last week. If I asked this of you, forgive me. Oh, I think I did because you threw in the Royals. We were talking about what are the bullpens that you least trust, and you said Rockies, Rangers, Marlins, and Tigers. Do you still consider the Royals part of that, or you've put them in a different tier? And then let's try it with the names again. Who are the closers, the only closers you can trust? And do you throw, after seeing Kenley throw 97 yesterday, did that change things for you with him?
It's not so much that I don't trust Kenley. It's his ability to pitch. I don't even want to say deep, It's just that he has maybe 20 pitches in him, and that's it. If he's not done after 20 pitches, those next 10 pitches are probably going to be not so great. And that's a common thing with relievers, but I think it's magnified with Kenley. So I'm usually never excited to see him come in a close game, but I can't watch Dodger games anyways, and they're blacked out in LA, so I can't see him pitch either way. So I don't have to worry about it.
By the way, quick tennis update. Rafael Nadal did lose the first set. Did lose the first set to Ilya Ivashka, 6-3. The answer to the question, what is Nadal after being down a set on clay against Ivashka? -312. I'm still not going to do it. Let him get down one more break, and I'll get back to you. Let's see what happens there. I'm sorry, Jason. There's tennis going on during the show.
No problem.
All right. Let me shift to, because you're always betting futures. And so here we are again, 10%-ish into the season. Are there some markets and some players in those markets where you still are trying to get more money down on? Let's start maybe with MVP in the National League.
Yeah, I bet a little bit more Corey Seager this week. He's still 13-1, and he's finally down to 10-1 yesterday. Acuna has a little bit of an oblique injury. He'll probably be fine, and he's clearly setting the pace right now, but I still like Seager. I think Soto, he's on the DL again. He hasn't really done anything to start the season, and obviously he's somewhere up there in the top five players in baseball, so I expect a lot out of him. And same with Mookie, but he's been in and out of the lineup. Soto's been on the DL. Those guys have been hurt. I like Seager at 10-1, 13-1, 15-1. You can shop for those numbers. In the AL, still Mike Trout. It's going to be him until or if Shohei Ohtani does anything spectacular, more spectacular than he's already done. NL Cy Young, it's DeGrom and Burns right now. Really, it's just the two of them worth discussing at the moment. And, really, I think Burns would be the winner after, what is it, three starts. I think he'd be my pick. But I think DeGrom and Burns are the guys. It's not really worth shopping for a number there. And I think in the AL side, I'm tempted to bet Garrett Cole at 3-1. I don't think there's really much outside of the top six or seven guys worth considering. And even though the Yankees have had a pretty bad start to the season, I think Cole's numbers have been elite. They'll stay elite. And 3-1 is a little short of a price, but I think I'm probably going to take some this week.
Take some on Cole, you said?
Yeah, take a little bit on Cole.
Oh, okay. Interesting. At 3-1, those are courtesy of BetMGM on the screen right now. This is something that was not as widely bet, but I'm curious, is there any rookie of the year things? I mean, obviously, Cabrian Hayes went out for Pittsburgh. Is there any rookie that has stood out at this point in the early going?
Well, so with rookie of the year, Westgate's the big market. They reprice it pretty much every day. They currently have like five guys in the NL under 10-1, and none of them really excite me at that price. I'm just kind of waiting to see Hayes come back and see what we get out of him before I look. I do think Zach McKinstry on the Dodgers is interesting.
It is interesting.
And I say interesting. 7-1 because Bellinger's hurt. He's played well. They're moving him around the lineup to get him in, almost every day right now. So, best team in baseball. 7-1 on rookie of the year. It's not a terrible bet. Not the best bet. And then the AL, they have a lot of guys listed near the top, like Akil Badu is like 8-1 and Yermin Mercedes is 7-1. None of those guys were on my radar preseason. They're still not really on my radar. They could win, but highly unlikely that either guy keeps up these numbers all season. So I'm looking a little deeper there. I'm actually trying to get a bet down there, so I don't have an answer for the AL until I get my bet in.
Yeah.
But basically the favorites in both leagues are fadeable at this point. You can't win rookie of the year with the performance in the first 10% of the season. You can't win MVP with your performance in the first 10% of the season. All you can do is really set the pace and separate yourself. And especially with Rookie of the Year, you have the Super 2 guys coming up in the next week or two. You know, Wander Franco, I saw he was 40-1 at Westgate. He'll be coming up. There's just so much baseball left. It's can't get in love with a favorite this early, especially Rookie of the Year. I wouldn't get in love with anybody.
You can't get in love with anybody. By the way, if it's DeGrom and Burns 1-2 in whatever order in the NL, would Clayton Kershaw be 3 right now?
Would he be 3 again? Cy Young model, which is incredibly wrong. They have Marcus Stroman as the winner, but no, I'm not sure. I'm not sure Kershaw would be 3. I've debated this in my head. You know, Trevor Bauer, Kershaw, Julio Urias has some good numbers. You know, I mean, that's the problem with the Dodgers is you're like, well, which guy would you pick? And you just pick Kershaw by default, I guess.
Yeah, we definitely...
None of them have separated themselves.
Yeah, by the way, who had Stroman as the winner of the Cy Young 10% of the way in? Who
ESPN.
Had...
I'll show you after the show. ESPN has the Cy Young predictor that uses some Bill James model that's just... It's so wrong.
Oh, my.
It's the amount of wrong that's like, why do you even bother putting something up so wrong?
Oh,
like,
my.
Yeah, I'll show you afterwards.
All right. I look forward to that. Last thing before I let you go here that I asked this of Josh Towers earlier. And again, it's just because we're talking, we have to say again, it's only 10% of the season. But is there a team, and I asked this of Josh earlier, is there a team that has either impressed you or disappointed you enough in the early going where you actually think it might have legs, that you think it's, you know, and I don't know if it's the Red Sox to the good or if it's someone else to the bad, where you're like, this, they actually might be a whole bunch better or worse than I suspected?
Yeah, I'll run through that real quick. Obviously, Red Sox, better than I thought. Don't have any money on them. Kind of disappointed about that. Royals, slightly better than I thought. Too early to get too excited about that. The White Sox, I've been really disappointed in their lineups and La Russa. You know, a lot of people have joked he's asleep at the wheel. Kind of getting that vibe myself at this point.
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about the White Sox. I'm not as impressed with them as, you know, like they're the hype. They were that preseason hype team. The Astros started out hot. I was worried that their pitching might not, you know, stand up and they would have issues. That looks like it's been correct so far. They're under 500. I expect them to kind of stay around there. You know, they weren't able to beat the Rockies yesterday. The Nationals have been a little disappointing, not surprised. Cubs, they're a little disappointing, not surprised. Again, they were expected to be slightly bad. And then the Giants surprised me to the upside. You know, they're probably going to be right on the edge of a wild card spot all through August, kind of like they were last year. And I'm sure we're going to have a whole lot of discussions about, can the Giants make the playoffs? And, you know, I think they've played good baseball so far.
I said it before the season when we're doing yes, no's, and I said one of these teams, right, in one of these leagues that nobody's talking about, nobody's thinking about, is going to be, even if they don't quite get to the postseason, they're going to be right in it right to the last week or weekend of the season and may even get there. And I said it's the Giants. It's the Giants because I believe in the organization. Now, it's only 10%. I could be wildly wrong. But so far, so good. Third best record in all of baseball. Should be fascinating to watch throughout. Jason, always appreciated, man. Thank you.
Thank you. It's always fun. I miss talking to Josh Towers. He's always interesting to get a former player's perspective on what's going on.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you both on together at some point, too. That would be cool. We'll do that.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk. I'll see you next week.
All right.
We'll talk off air.
Jason Weingarten, Point Spread Weekly writer, professional sports bettor with a expertise in baseball above all, perhaps, at Spreadopedia is where you can find him. By the way, Rafael Nadal immediately breaks Ilya Vashka to start that second set. So -312 might have been the lowest price, right? And if you're wondering, did you ever consider betting Vashka at +250? Not for a second. Because he's the king of clay. Hardest thing in tennis, maybe one of the hardest thing in sports to beat him on clay. You ever played tennis on clay, Jason?
Never.
Total bucket list item for me. Totally want to play on clay. But Nadal seems to have righted the ship there in that one. And somebody tweet me, what's going on in the Fognini match? Because it seems to have stopped right in the middle. Is Fabio having a meltdown? Is he having a long protracted injury? What's going on in that match? As we follow tennis all while doing the show. Brady Cannon will join us next. We will talk about the Zurich Classic. And again, this harkens back to my first segment today with Wes. It's a very interesting question in golf, especially for those who model the sport of golf, who use statistical models to bet golf. I'm talking about my buddies Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin, for instance, on Primetime Action, which I don't know if I've mentioned yet this morning, Jason, maybe but once. Drinking game. Everybody drink. It's on MSG Plus, Primetime Action, which I do with Kelly and Matt and, of course, Danielle Alvari. Nightly, they bet golf through models. And when we did that match play, where we did the brackets, remember at the WGC in Austin some weeks ago, it really messed around because it's a completely different format and there's elimination and it's like, it's fun to watch as a fan. Is it as good to bet though? Nah, maybe not so much. I would sort of ask Brady the same thing about this in this tournament when it's pairings. Guys playing in pairs. Maybe fun to watch as a fan. But you really want to bet this? Sometimes we've got to talk about things we shouldn't bet. And does Brady feel pressure to bet it because he co-hosts long shots? We'll get into all that. Coming back on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
With Gil Alexander.
Now based in Louisville, Kentucky. Flatter Racing Pod this week features trainer Steve Asmussen, who discusses his Kentucky Derby horses, Midnight Bourbon, and Super Stock, as well as his chances to win next week's Kentucky Oaks. Los Angeles Times turf writer John Sherva is also along to talk about how racing coverage has changed for him in recent years. There's also Twitter feedback on the dispute that limits Nevada betting on racetracks around the country. They still dealing with that? It's the Ron Flatter Racing Pod, the RFRP, available for download Friday at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. It's sponsored by First Bet. By the way, we got a podcast Thursday, tomorrow. Michael Lombardi, Drew Dinsick, Matt Brown, NFL Draft, Beating the Book podcast. We're back. I decided to get off my butt and do another podcast, Jason. You know, that's what I do.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, looking forward. That is the voice, ladies and gentlemen, of the co-host of Long Shots right here on VSiN, Brady Cannon. Follow him on Twitter at Las Vegas Golfer. And for all your golf needs, Tee Times USA, we're still doing that?
You bet.
All
right. Double duty here for the Cannon kid.
Let me just read some tweets real quick. We got tweets, Brady. I don't know if you know this, at Beating the Book. Michelin, did I miss a parlay fading OKC in Houston tonight? Pacers Jazz, Moneyline parlay, currently pays minus 250 on DK for me. I will not say no to that.
Tankapalooza, back on in 2021.
Oh, Jason's excited. He's like, did they just mention Tankapalooza? I can run a graphic right now. No, he didn't do it. Okay. This is from Make It Rain Man. The King of Clay went down to minus 312 live. Wow, yeah, no, I mentioned that exact number on air. And I didn't pull the trigger. Wanted him to get down one more break before I did it, but that was the lowest it'll probably get here as he's up a break in the second set. Adam Rickham talking about my conversation with Jason. My fade so far this year is Garrett Richards. He's absolutely terrible so far, but we'll love to keep seeing him every 5 days. And Richard Palma, no one in LA is happy when Kenley comes in. No, believe me, no one betting the Dodgers is, except for yesterday when he was hitting 97 on the gun, and you're like, oh, I don't know anymore. If they have that going for him. And then Trip Tepper, who talked to us about Russell Erksleben in the 1979 draft earlier, getting drafted 11th, he said GMs in the NFL, he's just deep diving into 70s NFL drafts. GMs in the NFL in the 70s were drunk or insane when it comes to the draft. In 1978, there were four punters/kickers selected in the first 78 picks.
Wow.
Teams had seemingly no clue at draft talent. Oh, my God. It's funny how it's changed. Can't wait for the draft, man.
You know, I said this, I believe, yesterday. I kind of like it better than the regular season.
That's from a guy who won a super contest.
You know, I mean, football's become very weird. You know, a lot of it's dictated by officiating. It seems late in games you get the inevitable, you know, pass interference call. So one team, come on, let's get this other team kind of back in the fold here that's getting killed by 20.
PI is terrible.
Yeah, and But the draft, I love to see how teams strategize and maneuver, and it's so exciting for the kids. And I like watching all these guys that I watched in college football the last couple seasons, you know, and where they're going to end up. It's really a 4-day party that I enjoy quite a bit.
I do too. Oh my God, I love it more than most things. Christmas for adults.
We're going to get you to love it more than the regular season pretty soon. Yeah, now, the playoffs, hey, I understand.
Yeah, playoffs, different story.
And there are certain games that are great. But the draft, I just love the draft. And I don't bet a whole lot on it. Oh, it's not a betting thing for me.
This morning, again, I'm like, under 1.5 tight ends, minus 380, I'm in. Bet it right here at the South Point. No, I'll lay juice. I just love the draft. And love it for all the reasons. The drama of you know, who makes the quirky pick? Mm-hmm. Who makes, there's always a team. Like
who panics?
The Bears trading up for Trubisky was not armchair quarterbacking. It was that moment where we're like, what are they doing? Deshaun Watson is there. Now, let's not get crazy. No one thought Mahomes would turn out necessarily to be what he was. But Deshaun Watson had performed on the greatest stage in college football against the vaunted Alabama defense when they had a spectacular defense in the most meaningful game in college football. And he's like, we're trading up for this kid who played 13 games at UNC.
But, hey, Mr. Pace, have you seen that kid, that Tar Heel out of UNC?
Yeah, that's right. It's just, so there's always that, right? And the Raiders, by the way, the Raiders, the local team here, they're often the guilty party, right? Because they overdraft. It's like after all these years, they don't get the draft. Like, and that's not a commentary, because I'm the first person to say, you know, people like us, okay, we don't know who's going to be good or bad either necessarily in the end. But there is some, we do have the right to comment on the mechanics of the draft and playing the draft game. Mm-hmm. The draft is a game. Mm-hmm. You're playing poker with other teams.
Sure.
And that's the fascinating part that we do feel like we are able to chime in on. And some teams like the Raiders don't seem to get it. We'll see if they do this year.
They seem to draft from very good programs. They seem to draft name players. But like you say, as far as the poker side of it, maybe they're not drafting those players in the right spot, what have you. There's clearly teams that are better at it than others.
The Raiders fall in love. They fall deeply in love with, like, the Henry Ruggs.
I hope they nail it this year. You know, it's great when our local team is good.
All right, we will talk Zurich Classic with Brady, I promise. After the break, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Football season never ends, and it's time to get your bets ready for the NFL draft. The teams are evaluating the prospects, and our football experts are looking for betting opportunities. We're looking at team needs, position props, and futures markets to find the best bets on the board. Get full coverage on VSiN.com, daily best bet email updates, 24/7 video access. Plus, we'll be live all night during round one a week from tomorrow night with Brent Musburger, Michael Lombardi, and former first rounder Mike Pritchard, and all our VSiN football experts, the primetime action crew, myself, Matt Brown, Daniel Avari, Kelly Bidlin. We will be manning it from circa from 5 to 9 Pacific, 8 to midnight Eastern. We'll have humans on. We'll have JVT on. Anybody else who wants to chime in, can't wait for that night. Learn more and start your free VSiN trial now at VSiN.com. That is VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander, Brady Cannon, kind enough to stick with us. He hosts the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi here at the top of the hour. I got Lombardi coming on before that as well. Brady, let me go back to the question I had before the last break, which was, okay, different sort of format this week, Zurich Classic, and you can explain that to folks who haven't heard it yet. You like it as a fan? Do you like it as much as a bettor?
Yes and no. I do like it as a fan, and I think it kind of breaks up the usual grind of the PGA Tour week-to-week stroke play events. You know, we had the match play not long ago. That was really fun with the brackets, kind of golf's version of March Madness, and match play is so exciting. And now you have a team event, and you have the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and other team formats on the European Tour and stuff. I think it's cool to see these PGA Tours be able to kind of rub shoulders and yuck it up a little bit and strategize together and otherwise, they're out on an island every week, all by themselves, you know, trying to lock in and focus. And I think it's kind of cool to see them loosen up a little bit and play as a team, like we often do as layman golfers, in a member guest at your local club or in your club, you know, gathering at your Muni course or whatever it is. You know, golf is such a social sport, and the camaraderie that is involved, it's nice to see the pros experience that. And now you have a competition amongst the very best in the world. So I think it's very cool to watch, But handicapping it is difficult because
sure.
you can assess one player's skill set against everybody else. And you were talking about it in the segment when you finished up with Jason on baseball about, you know, modeling two players and taking all these skill sets that you point to. And I did that. I took each individual skill set that I thought was important this week and then meshed it with their teammate's skill set and came up with one number and you know, ran that across the field. But that's absolutely not foolproof
right.
because when you put, you know, I mean, I equated it to this the other day. JJ was asking about it, our producer for the Lombardi Line. How do you do this? And I said, well, what if the Patriots and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team up and they're going to play the Steelers and the Rams? How do you handicap that? You know, it's kind of the same way, right?
Yes.
You know, like, okay, this team's really good at passing. They're good at running, you know, and you just try and make some sense out of it. So I went a lot lighter with the betting this week, but and certainly going to have some fun with it.
And just having 44 football players on the field at the same time would be problematic. That's a lot of players. All right, so what did you end up falling on here?
The shortest shot I played, and I think this is a really sexy team, Bubba Watson and Scottie Scheffler. And the way I went about this, Gil, I didn't necessarily look for the most powerful team, and Matt Brown kind of went about it this way as well. I went for two players that really complement each other. If one guy drives the ball really accurate and one guy drives the ball very far, one guy's really good with his iron play, one guy's really good with his short game. I won a member guest at my local country club here. 2011 was a pretty good year. Won the member Jeez. Guest and the super contest.
Brady's peak.
I have been downhill ever since. But
what a year.
We ham and egged it. And that's a golf term.
Yeah.
You know, one guy's the ham, one guy's the egg. And I think you kind of have to handicap this tournament like that, where one guy may be really good at what the other guy's weakness is. And I think they complement each other that way. Now, Scheffler and Watson are both really good off the tee, so they ought to be able to have their ball in play and long throughout this tournament. Bubba Watson is very good on strokes gained approach. Scottie Scheffler is very good in scrambling, and they both make a lot of birdies. So I really like that combination. And this tournament is really won or lost in the alternate shot format. And you talked about this format and describing it here. On Thursday and Saturday, the round one and round three, they will play best ball, which is each player plays their own golf ball just like normal. And whoever has the lower score of the two, that's your team's score. On Friday and Sunday, they play alternate shot. So one guy hits it off the tee, next guy hits the approach shot, one guy putts, back and forth like that. And over the course of the years that they've played this format, this is just the fourth time that they've done it, the tournament is really won and lost in the alternate shot format. The best ball is just about making a bunch of birdies. But alternate shot involves strategy, and hopefully you don't screw your partner and you drive one into the rough or into the weeds, you know. So
I would love to see tension between two partners. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, there you go. So Watson and Scheffler, Wes is on this one as well. I went with Max Homa and Taylor Gooch. They played in the final pairing. They're good friends, and they played in the final pairing when Homa won the Genesis Invitational at Riviera. And Homa talked about how comforting it was to have his buddy in his final pairing. It really calmed him down. And they too, you know, complement each other as far as skill sets. And they're more of a powerhouse team where they kind of do everything very well. Joel Damon and Lonto Griffin, I got at 65-1. And that was really an outlier of a number, pretty much consensus about 40-1. So I was happy to find 65. Damon is very accurate off the tee. Griffin is very long. And again, one good on approach, one good on scrambling, and they both make a lot of birdies. And then Jason Kokrak and Pat Perez, kind of the same formula here. Kokrak has the great long game. Perez much better in the short game. They're both BetMGM sponsor guys here, you know, locally. I don't know if that matters at all, but I think it creates possibly a little bit of a bond. I do think you want to find partners that tend to get along, or buddies, or have some history that is positive together. And then the one I just kind of had a hunch on, they've done well here in the past, Martin Laird and Nick Taylor. Taylor, again, is kind of the shorter, accurate hitter with a decent short game. Martin Laird, more of the long ball hitter off the tee, and took a shot at them at 90-1. So, again, these are kind of darts. You try and make some sense of it, but this is not a tournament I think you get heavily invested in. You enjoy it and hope you land on the right one.
And there are no matchups and that kind of thing?
There are.
There are.
And I think that's even tougher.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything with that.
Yeah.
you know, that gets really difficult.
I would imagine.
You know, Matt Brown brought up one team that he is fading this week, and I would agree with him. If you're going to bet against a team in matchups, it's Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf. Matthew Wolf has just been in awful form for at least 6 weeks now, maybe 2 months. And he did withdraw from a tournament not long ago, citing injury. And you wonder if that's still lingering because he has not found his game. Colin Morikawa in that final pairing on Sunday at the RBC Heritage with Stuart Sink never made a charge. You know, his iron play is maybe the best in the world. His short game is not. That would be a team I would fade if I was going to go against anybody in head-to-head matchups.
Morikawa and Wolf.
Yes.
Okay. Brady, appreciated. Always interesting. Last thing real quick. Yes, no. If you didn't co-host Long Shots, would you still bet this tournament?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make
sure.
Yeah,
I think yes.
Probably. It's a good answer.
Golf's my deal, right?
Yeah.
I like betting golf.
Okay.
So.
Just checking.
Long Shots is a product of my golf background.
There you go. Brady hosting Lombardi Line at the top of the hour. I will talk to Michael Lombardi next on A Numbers Game. Welcomes you to Showtime with a chance to win $100 for a $1 moneyline wager on the Clippers or Grizzlies in tonight's game. Just use bonus code VSIN100 and you're on your way to betting with the king of sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com for more details and use promo code VSIN100 to bet $1 and win $100 if either team hits a three. New customer offer paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. It's Gil Alexander. This gentleman is kind enough to join us every week on Wednesday, right before he takes the air with the Lombardi Line. You can follow him on Twitter at MLombardiNFL. The name of the book is Gridiron Genius. The name of the podcast is GM Shuffle, which he does with his buddy Adnan Virk. Writes for The Athletic, does it all, can tell you what good Italian food is versus bad. It's Michael Lombardi. How you doing, Michael?
I'm good. That's probably the most accurate one of all those descriptions, right? I mean, good Italian food, right? What is that? That is that's something that I, as fat as I am, I have become an authority on that subject. Yes,
you're an authority on other things. I had the pleasure of having dinner once with you and your lovely wife Millie, and I noticed that you were very, very deliberate, very picky about your food.
Well, I think, you know, that dinner you had that night was with Bernadette and Millie, two very good cooks. So it's a critique of they're best friends. They're like sisters. They really are sisters. I don't know how we haven't biologically proven they're sisters, but we know they're sisters. And so, you know, it's a very breakdown of all the foods. I mean, they can break it down. They can break the wine and the food down perfectly. So you have to be on your toes.
Oh, you're making me hungry. All right. Michael, I'm glad we could recover from the Julian Edelman Art Monk incident.
Oh, we're good. Look, we're all good. It's never nothing. You know, disagreeing is not a bad thing.
Oh, no, it wasn't disagreeing. It was a shot to my heart, Michael. It's a different story.
Oh, well. Oh,
I'm sorry about that. All right, number one, if Mac Jones doesn't go three, let's start with that. If he doesn't go three, how far might he fall?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of teams that, you know, that are picking in that other cluster. You know, Mac Jones has got this label that he's not athletic. You know, he's got this label that he can't make a second play. I think that's been the narrative about him. You know, where would he fall to? I think he would have a lot of interest. I think there's certainly he could go to Detroit. I think Detroit's the sleeper team for me, because if you understand how these teams operate, Detroit, they hired Brad Holmes from the Rams, okay? But Chris Spielman's in that building. And if you've ever listened to Chris Spielman do a college football game, all he talks about is pad level, grit, toughness, you know, smacking somebody, proper fundamentals and techniques. I mean, you've heard it, right?
Oh, sure.
You think that does all that verbiage add up to them taking a receiver?
Doesn't sound like it, but who knows?
Doesn't sound like it, does it? You know, and so, you know, they got Goff on a cheap contract. I don't know if what the Panthers would do. I think Denver would be definitely in play here. I think Denver would see him as a guy that could come in and run the Shermer offense and be the perfect complement to what they want to do.
All right, this question.
Look, if you like Kirk Cousins, you like Mac Jones.
Okay. Let me follow up with a Mac Jones question. I wasn't going to go here, but to that point, like I do find, because I know you think you have remained steadfast that Mac Jones is going to San Francisco at three. And, you know, I did, for those on my side who are like, oh, Mac Jones going three, I mean, it occurs to me that Daniel Jones went six. Like, it's not that outlandish to think that Mac Jones would go three then, right, just from that prism.
Hey, Gil, Tua went four.
Yeah.
Do you know what Tua averaged on third down in the National Football League this year?
Oh, man. What did
yards per attempt?
How much?
4.25.
Oh.
Is that good?
It's not good. It's not good. No. I'm told that's
so,
not
like,
good.
So, like, what are we talking about? We treat Tua like he's on another planet. Mac Jones lapped Tua. He lapped Tua. Now, I want to be really clear here. Would I pick Mac Jones at three? Probably not. Would I pick Sewell at three? Absolutely. I'm going to pick the Pro Bowl player, right? And you say, well, you need a quarterback. Yeah, well, you know, Dan Marino went 5 years without going to the playoffs with the greatest coach of all time. So, yeah, I know I need a quarterback, but I also need a team. And if I were the Jets and I had Sam Darnold at quarterback and I had, you know, Becton at left tackle and I had Sewell at right tackle, I would have the two best tackles in all of football and I would be hard to play. So that being said, I'm not a Mac Jones apologist. I think there's a 90% chance he goes three. I think there's a 10% chance Trey Lance goes three. I think there's a lot of conversations in the 49ers organization from their personnel people, their scouts. They really like Trey Lance. I think the head coach, if you understand how he thinks and what he prioritizes in terms of something that he values, I think it's Mac Jones. Now, why you say, why not Justin Fields? I just don't think that's the fit. It doesn't mean Justin Fields isn't a good player. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that, look, what did we learn from Alex Smith's career? We learned that when the system matches the player's talent, the player shines.
Yeah.
Because his first 4 years in the league was disastrous. I mean, Alex Smith averaged under 50% completions his third year in the National Football League in the seven games he played. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Robert Griffin III, 2012, under Kyle Shanahan, greatest example of matching, you know, a scheme to a player. By the way, I'm so glad you said what you said. Just because you think Mac Jones, just because you've remained steadfast, doesn't mean you don't like the other guys. I will say the same thing about me. Just because I don't believe the Niners traded up to three to get Mac Jones doesn't mean I don't like Mac Jones. You know, have you seen, by the way, Michael, so remember John Gruden used to do these great things on ESPN where he would interview all the potential quarterbacks. Kirk.
And loved every one of them.
Yeah.
And loved every one of them. Kirk, but really hated everyone, but loved them all. Yes, go ahead.
Kirk Herbstreit does it now. It's called QB 21.
Like, I couldn't watch.
Well, here's the thing. Mac Jones was spectacular on it.
Of course he was. Yeah. He's teaching Billy O'Brien the offense at Alabama.
Yeah.
Why do you think, you know, I heard Bucky Brooks say the other day that he doesn't think Mac Jones is worthy of the third pick because we're no longer in a traditional drop back pass game, that you need to make loose plays, you need to move around. Okay, I get that, yes. But at the end of the day, intelligence and the ability to get the ball out of your hand to the right guy is supersedes buying a second look. That supersedes buying a second look. And I think that's what we're missing on Mac Jones is we're missing that part.
This falls into the category of trying to say something about the NFL draft that no one else has brought up. So just let me preface it by saying this. I'll let the hate wash over me. It occurs to me that when I was betting college football over the last 3 or 4 years, there was a guy that when I used to bet on him and his team, he would always come through for me. And when I would bet against him, he would destroy me. He would literally drag his team to victory. And that was Sam Ellinger of Texas. And he's supposed to go like, you know, 250. I think his draft prop is like in the 250s. And I'm not saying he's Justin Fields or Mac Jones at the pro level or any of these guys. But like, do we forget about guys like that entirely too quickly? Like a guy who just has the ability to win football games in a way that bettors remember more than others?
I think, you know, what most people see in Ellinger is they see a guy that if you draft him, you got a backup quarterback. And, you know, and that's what they see. Now, you know, I think when you say that, when I say backup quarterback, that means a guy who can make your roster, you know, can contribute if he had a play in a backup role. That's a fourth or fifth round type pick player for me. And so I think he's been labeled that. I think because he doesn't have dominating physical skills, you know, he doesn't throw the ball like with great power. It's a little bit Gardner Minshew-ish, right? Like, tell me why Gardner Minshew isn't more in play with a lot of teams. When you watched him in the 26 games he's played at Jacksonville, the 20-some games he's played down there, he's played better than any other Jacksonville quarterback. He's played better than some other guys. You could make the argument that he has a game similar to, not as good as, Baker Mayfield's if he was in that scheme. But you get labeled a backup, and unless you can prove yourself out of it, it's very challenging. Remember, you had Trent Green on your practice squad in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Nobody wanted him. You know, he was a ninth-round pick or an eighth round pick when it was only before we went to seven rounds. He got cut by the Chargers, had no practice squad ability. They had to go to Canada, got cut in Canada, ended up on Washington's practice squad because Cam Cameron remembered him in San Diego.
Right. Cam Cameron, who ended up coaching at Indiana. Trent Green was one of the long line of Washington quarterbacks, like Mark Rippon, like Stan Humphries, who held a clipboard for years. And then when he played, were just outstanding. And then he parlayed into the big contract with the St. Louis Rams at the time. And obviously we know what happened with his preseason injury. And the rest is Kurt Warner history. Okay, last couple questions. Are you 100% convinced the Jets are taking Zach Wilson? And the reason I bring this up is I had been saying this, that you know, Niners and Jets coaching staffs, they know each other. Maybe they have dialogue behind the scenes. Finally, there was an article yesterday that corroborated it for me where someone pointed out, they're like, the Jets have never mentioned Zach Wilson once. You're still 100% convinced?
Yeah, I am, because, I mean, because they haven't mentioned it to the public, but the people in the Jets building have mentioned it to everybody you talk to.
Okay.
So I don't, you know, it's a little bit like I'm not getting the information on Mac Jones at three from people in the media. I'm getting it from people that talk to people in the building that are in the building that are and that's what you get. Now, is there a margin of error? I'm sure there is. Could it be Trey Lance at three? I think there's a 10% chance, maybe 20%. I know there's people in the 49er building that likes him. Do I think it's Mac Jones? Yeah, I do.
All right. Last thing then. You say it. You continue to be convinced that Justin Fields, probability-wise, will not go number three. By the way, the betting markets, at least the way the betting movement has gone, agrees with you that Justin Fields will not go number three. What's the latest on where you do believe he ends up?
I think he could easily go to seven. I think if Miami gets shut out of receivers, they're going to try to hope somebody wants to come up to get a quarterback. I think that if seven doesn't take him, then I think Carolina would be in play, not so much for Fields, but will Washington come get him? What's Denver going to do? Will Denver trade up to four, five, or six to get Trey Lance? I think that's the intrigue going on. And then we still have Washington and Chicago to contend with as they come from the back of the pack.
All right, Michael, go do your show, The Lombardi Line. Thank you for doing the podcast tomorrow. I look forward to it. And then, of course, night. Can't wait.
Thank you, Gil.
Thank you. Michael Lombardi, everybody, at M. Lombardi NFL. Brady Cannon and Michael Lombardi, top of the hour for today's The Lombardi Line. Let's get that proper. Always a must listen right here on VSiN, exclusively on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thank you to Jason Weingarten. Thank you to Wes Reynolds. Thank you to Josh Towers. Thank you to Paul Carr. Thank you to Brady. Thank you, everybody. Good luck with all our bets today. Astros, again, is my baseball play of the day. And if you're wondering, Rafael Nadal did win the second set. And he'll probably end up winning that third one. By the way, walkover in the Fognini match. Walkover. So check your betting rules as to how that got graded. Coming back with the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.